Seekers, welcome to tonight's episode of the Mike Malloy Program. That's what we're going to call it now, episodes. Thanks for tuning in. We don't have any sponsors tonight. Oh, well, that's okay. I just wanted to say that so you don't think to yourself, gee, he forgot to mention the sponsor. Very quickly on Anthony Weiner, New York's first impression is that Anthony Weiner should not resign his post. It's going to ABC News. Survey of 500 New York City registered voters conducted by New York One Television and Marist College. Only 30% say Weiner should resign. 51% said he should stay. 18% were too distracted or said they were not sure. The New York voters say he should just stay and, you know, Republican real estate freak Donald Trump put up another YouTube where he calls Weiner a psycho and a bad guy. Trump? Trump is calling someone a psycho? Jesus God. And a bad guy? Donald Trump? This miserable bastard is calling Weiner? And Eric Cantor said he should resign. Just to be perverse, I hope he stays. Rick Santorum, you know, this past Sunday, and I forgot to mention on Monday, I had intended to, but last Sunday was the 67th anniversary of D-Day, the invasion of Normandy by Allied troops. And Rick Santorum, the corpse cuddler, tried to connect the people who fought and died on the beaches of Normandy. He tried to connect them to the launching of his campaign. These filthy Republicans, I swear to God, they you know, I've said it a million times, I think I said it the other night, they have no moral sense, no sense of ethics, nothing. They are devoid of everything. Can you imagine being married to a Republican? Holy Christ. And as Steve Bannon pointed out in Washington Monthly yesterday, Santorum says the best way to honor World War II veterans is to privatize Medicare. That's the way you honor. Oh, my Christ. Oh, my God. Damn it, Jesus. Santorum said that what he and Paul Ryan, the chairman of the House Budget Committee, what he and Ryan want to do is, quote, give people the resources to go out and choose for themselves, choose what's best for themselves, end quote. You know, just like Ryan, Santorum, he chose what was best for his children, that they should fondle and kiss a corpse, their little sibling. Anyway, unlike Obama, Santorum continued, who is spitting in the face of those Americans who fought on D-Day 67 years ago. Obama is spitting in the face. Now, there's a lot of things wrong with Obama, but God damn, he's not spitting. Oh, never mind. Why am I building a defense? This is Rick Santorum, this crazy, filthy old man talking. Anyway, Santorum went on, quote, almost 60,000 average Americans had the courage to go out and charge those beaches on Normandy, to drop out of airplanes, who knows where, and take on the battle for freedom. He went on, average Americans, the very Americans that our government now and this president does not trust to make a decision on your health care plan. What? Those Americans risk everything so they can make that decision on their health care plan. God damn, he's crazier than Palin. Is that possible? These are lunatics. Somebody left the padlock off the gate. You know, those real nice wrought iron gates with the fancy scroll work and the filigree at the top, you know, all that. They left the lock off, and these sons of bitches are streaming out like so many haints, just running out into the countryside. I'm going to run for president. Woo! What's going to be your platform? Oh, I'm for all the dead veterans. I love dead babies and dead veterans. The dead veterans died so Medicare wouldn't, there wouldn't be health care. As Steve Bennett points out, remember, this wasn't some kind of odd criticism of the Affordable Care Act. This was Rick Santorum arguing that Medicare itself denies seniors choices, which it doesn't. And because Medicare denies seniors choices, which it doesn't, it means seniors are less free, which they're not, which means those who fought for freedom don't want Medicare or something. Seniors, like the rest of the country, actually like Medicare quite a bit. You seen any polling that shows a distinction between World War II veterans on Medicare and the rest of Medicare's beneficiaries? Yeah. Any polls there? My God. I'm telling you, somebody left a gate open. They didn't replace the padlock. And you have these Republicans running around in the disposable slippers and those white hospital gowns that fasten up the back, tie up the back, and their hair is all askew and their eyes are wide and they're all foaming at the mouth and they're screaming about how they're going to run for president because Obama hates the veterans of Normandy and D-Day was all about Medicare, which there wasn't any back then. And Paul Revere warned the British, and Bachman's husband doesn't get payments for the people he holds prisoner in his old folks' homes so he can get their checks. It just goes on and on. And now Grover Norquist makes all the candidates sign a pledge before they even declare they're going to run for the crazy party. The pledge is that under no circumstances will they ever raise taxes. The goddamn country, they can be turning the lights out. And the Chinese are coming through city after city, collecting all the furniture and taking the dogs and cats and anything not nailed down. And the only thing that would save us would be a tax increase. But Grover Norquist won't let them sign, or makes them sign, that they'll never do a tax increase. This is insanity. This is madness. But it's also funny as hell. excuse me, macabre sort of way. In a real dark humor sort of way, because we're all burning and choking to death and drowning and going up in flames, and so that puts kind of this sheen on everything, but it's amusing. It is very amusing to watch all this. As a matter of fact, something I haven't done in a long time, I'm going to share something Thomas Friedman wrote with you. And he quotes an Australian author. You got to hear this. Stick around. Nobody told me there'd be days like these. Strange days indeed. Most peculiar, mama. Everybody's smoking. Yeah, there's UFOs over New York.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
21 past the hour. All right, before I go to Friedman, email here from Reg. Mike, Wiener is my representative in the U.S. House. For the record, I've spent the past 2 days talking to hundreds of New Yorkers in my district to get support for two vital bills up for a vote in our state Senate. One is to extend the moratorium against hydrofracking, which expires July 1 of this year. And the other is to classify fracking fluid as hazardous waste so the waste material is handled properly and doesn't end up in our drinking water. Not a single conversation with anyone involved Anthony Weiner's sexting garbage. We are facing such serious problems that are urgent and life-threatening and affect people in 36 states right now. And we must get the word out about the impending environmental disaster that would take place should the gas companies get the drilling rights thereafter. In my personal conversations with family and friends, no one has bothered to bring up the new photo or Weiner's wife's pregnancy. We all read the news and know what's happening. I just think most New Yorkers understand that there is so much more important going on than this scandal. How comforting is that, Reg? Well, it's on the one hand, it's very comforting that people are not going for this garbage. On the other hand, refer to the first hand. Friedman writes, you really have to wonder whether a few years from now we'll look back at the first decade of the 21st century when food prices spiked, energy prices soared, world population surged, tornadoes plowed through the cities, floods and droughts set records, populations were displaced, and governments were threatened by the confluence of it all, and ask ourselves, what were we thinking? How did we not panic when the evidence was so obvious that we'd crossed some growth-slash-climate-slash-natural-resource-slash-population red lines all at once? Paul Gilding, the veteran Australian environmentalist entrepreneur who described this moment in a new book called The Great Disruption, Why the Climate Crisis Will Bring on the End of Shopping and the Birth of a New World, Paul Gilding says, the only answer can be denial. When you are surrounded by something so big that requires you to change everything about the way you think and see the world, then denial is the natural response. But the longer we wait, the bigger the response required. End quote. Gilding cites the work of the Global Footprint Network, GFN. It's an alliance of scientists which calculates how many, quote, planet Earths, end quote, we need to sustain our current growth rates. GFN measures how much land and water area we need to produce the resources we consume and to absorb our waste using prevailing technology. On the whole, says the Global Footprint Network, we are currently growing at a rate that is using up the Earth's resources far faster than they can be sustainably replenished. So we are eating into the future. Right now, global growth is about 1.5 Earths. Gilding says, quote, having only one planet makes this a rather significant problem. End quote. This is not science fiction. This is what happens when our system of growth and the system of nature hit the wall at the same time. Gilding writes, quote, if you cut down more trees than you grow, you run out of trees. If you put additional nitrogen into a water system, you change the type and quantity of life that water can support. If you thicken the Earth's CO2 blanket, the Earth gets warmer. If you do all these and many more things at once, you change the way the whole system of planet Earth behaves, with social, economic, and life support impacts. This is not speculation. This is high school science. End quote. Are you familiar with the Global Footprint Network? I'll pick up on what Friedman had to say, what Gilding had to say when we come back after the break. But if you are not, Global Footprint Network. Do a quick search. See what you come up with. We'll be right back.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So, okay, we faced a lot of stuff in the first few years of the century. Tornadoes, energy prices going up, food prices spiking, floods, droughts, populations displaced, governments threatened. All sorts of stuff. And there's a writer, a veteran Australian environmentalist entrepreneur, Paul Gilding, who has a book out called The Great Disruption, Why the Climate Crisis Will Bring on the End of Shopping and the Birth of a New World. And Gilding writes, among other things, I'm going to repeat this, quote, if you cut down more trees than you grow, you run out of trees. If you put additional nitrogen into a water system, you change the type and quantity of life that water can support. If you thicken the Earth's CO2 blanket, the Earth gets warmer. If you do all these things and many more things all at once, you change the way the whole system of planet Earth behaves, with social, economic, and life support impacts. This is not speculation. This is high school science. End quote. It's also current affairs, Friedman writes. China's environment minister, Zhao Zhenzhen, said recently, quote, in China's thousands of years of civilization, the conflict between humankind and nature has never been as serious as it is today. He goes on, the depletion, deterioration, and exhaustion of resources and the worsening ecological environment have become bottlenecks and grave impediments to the nation's economic and social development, end quote. Now, what the Chinese minister is telling us, says Gilding, is that, quote, the earth is full. We are now using so many resources and putting out so much waste into the earth that we have reached some kind of limit given to current technologies. The economy is going to have to get smaller in terms of physical impact, end quote. Friedman. We will not change systems, though, without a crisis. But don't worry! We're getting there! We're currently caught in two loops. One is that more population growth and more global warming together are pushing up food prices. Rising food prices cause political instability in the Middle East, for example, which leads to higher oil prices, which leads to higher food prices, which leads to more instability. At the same time, improved productivity means fewer people are needed in every factory to produce more stuff. So if we want to have more jobs, we need more factories. More factories making more stuff makes more global warming. And that is where the two loops meet. But Gilding is actually an eco-optimist. As the impact of the imminent great disruption, and it's coming, truth seekers, as it hits us, he says, quote, our response will be proportionally dramatic, mobilizing as we do in war. We will change at a scale and speed we can barely imagine today, completely transforming our economy, including our energy and transport industries, in just a few short decades, end quote. He predicts that we will realize that the consumer-driven growth model is broken. And we have to move to a more happiness-driven growth model based on people working less and owning less. Gilding asks, quote, how many people lie on their deathbed and say, I wish I had worked harder or built more shareholder value? And how many will say, I wish I had gone to more ball games, read more books to my kids, taken more walks? To do that, you need a growth model based on giving people more time to enjoy life, but with less stuff, end quote. Friedman says, does that sound utopian? Gilding insists he's a realist. He says, quote, we are heading for a crisis-driven choice. We either allow collapse to overtake us, or we develop a new sustainable economic model. We will choose the latter, because we may be slow, but we're not stupid. End quote. Thomas Friedman's column in today's Times. I hope that Mr. Gilding is correct. I hope that we are not stupid. But as I look at the leadership and the followership in this country, I look at who the leaders are, how they got to, I'm talking political and business leaders, banking leaders, financial leaders. When I look at the leadership class in this country, and realize how they got to be leaders and who put them there. Who put them there? And the mechanics of used to put them there. It makes me hope that Gilding is right. We may be slow, but we're not stupid. I hope that's true. Gilding is an optimist. Just making that statement, he apparently does not live in this country. This country is in the weeds. We really are. We have totally lost direction. A little bit later tonight, I'm going to share with you something that is similar in tone, if not in content, that Bob Alexander sent me. A Moment with Bob coming up this evening will be his, I don't know if you're aware of this, Kathy, it will be his 100th Moment with Bob. 100th. Meanwhile, out in Arizona, according to the LA Times, the wildfires continue to spread from Arizona toward New Mexico. Thousands of firefighters struggling. They are losing. The biggest problem was the weather, with winds exceeding 35 miles an hour, humidity running about 7%. The lack of moisture was making all of the growth, particularly the forests of ponderosa pine, far more combustible, and the wind was driving flames to new sources of fuel. The major fire, there are three of them now, and one in New Mexico. The original fire, called the Wallow Fire, has already exceeded almost 500,000 acres. And if you add the other fires, the total reached more than 600 square miles by this morning. Among the firefighters, no fatalities have been reported. This is the 11th day that they have struggled against this. And you know, the morons, the moron class that leads us now, the leadership moron class, the one that Mr. Gilding seems to feel will not prevail, that we will come out of this, the moron class in this country, that would be the Republicans, and not a few Democrats, are continuing to deny. Just like Gilding says, when you are faced with the crises that we're faced with right now, I think Obama said it, they turn to their Bibles and guns, or as Gilding says, you turn to denial. That's the only way you can handle it. We've talked about that on this program, avoidance and denial. Oh my God, how many times? But the leadership class, the Republican leadership class in this country, is not only involved in denial, it's criminal denial. Because they would cause even more hardship. And until people understand, it doesn't make any difference what Republicans or right-wingers or baggers or any of these clowns say. We are in a period of global climate change. It is happening before our eyes. We have been warned about it for 20 years. We refuse to do anything about it. Listen, brothers and sisters, it's here. It's here. The predictions now from climatologists, not the weather predictors that the Republicans turn to, but the climatologists, when they talk about Minneapolis-St. Paul with 100-plus degree Fahrenheit temperatures this time of year, 20 years from now, that will be normal.
Such a cold, such a lonesome.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. The attack on Planned Parenthood is another example of the half-asses that are running the country. In Indiana, a federal judge is considering whether to block the implementation of a recently passed law that defunds Planned Parenthood of Indiana. And while the judge is considering that, more than 20,000 low-income patients are on the verge of losing their primary health care provider. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, another one of the people in the crazy class, signed a bill in early May that, among other things, blocks Medicaid patients from being reimbursed for health services at Planned Parenthood clinics. The bill also requires doctors, these are two separate things, to tell a pregnant woman, a woman seeking abortion, that the fetus might feel pain during the procedure. Republicans in Indiana said the bill is intended to prevent taxpayer-funded abortions, even though the Hyde Amendment has prevented government money from being used for abortions for the past 30 years. There is no federal tax money that goes for abortions. It was banned by the Henry Hyde Amendment. You remember Henry Hyde, the Catholic militant from Illinois, Opus Dei Catholic, who cheated on his wife, broke up a marriage, caused a man almost to commit suicide, a hypocritical son of a bitch like most of these right-wing Catholic Republicans are, the ones who are in power. But the Hyde Amendment forbade the use of federal tax dollars for abortions, and it has been that way for 30 years. So any money that Planned Parenthood gets from the federal government cannot be used for abortions. But the Republicans, being the dumb bastards that they are, the evil, venal leadership class that they are, continues to tell the lie. Now, since this bill in Indiana took effect, Planned Parenthood of Indiana has received an unprecedented amount of donations from nearly 1,200 donors across three continents. People trying to help. The donations equaled $116,000. And Planned Parenthood of Indiana estimates that the money will allow it to continue providing medical services to its current Medicaid patients through June 20. PP, Planned Parenthood Indiana President and CEO Betty Cockrum says, quote, "We are delighted that this astounding outpouring of donations from around the world continues. Using these generous gifts to provide pap tests, birth control, and sexually transmitted disease testing and treatment to our Medicaid patients is absolutely the right thing to do," end quote. But unless Judge Tanya Walton Pratt strikes down this defunding law passed in Indiana, when the money runs out, Planned Parenthood of Indiana says it will be forced to close at least seven of its clinics in poor, rural, or medically underserved areas, lay off up to 30 health center staff, and displace an estimated 21,000 Medicaid patients from their primary health provider. None of the clinics that would be shut down provide abortions. Not one. At a hearing 2 days ago, attorneys for the ACLU and Planned Parenthood Federation of America asked the judge to stop the law from being implemented because it is designed to penalize health providers that perform legal, privately funded abortions. Moreover, the attorneys argued the law endangers patients by requiring providers to give patients misleading information about abortion. A recent study by the Guttmacher Institute, a leading reproductive health research and advocacy group, estimates that unintended pregnancies cost U.S. taxpayers an estimated $11 billion a year. The Indiana Family and Social Services Administration reported in 2008 that over half of all Indiana births were financed by Medicaid, averaging a cost of $11,250 per birth. This is what Republicans do. This is because they are sociopaths, they are religious fanatics, and they will do their share to destroy the country. 22,000 people in Indiana denied health coverage of the sort that Planned Parenthood provides in clinics where abortions are not provided, because no abortion is allowed for the past 30 years to be performed with tax dollars. And yet the Republicans continue the lie. Just like their lie that tax breaks will help small businesses hire people. No. You know what makes small businesses hire people? When there's a demand for their product. That's the only time small businesses hire people. According to Huffington Post, and stick around. I want to say this first. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, A Moment with Bob. It is number 100, A Moment with Bob. And it will tie in neatly to what we were talking about last hour. Anyway, according to Huffington Post, another battle against people who have to be gay, who want to have children, want to adopt children. There's so many kids who desperately need parents. There's so many people who desperately want to adopt. But because of their sexual orientation, the bigotry and prejudice against them is just, it's just astonishing to me. I've never been able to understand this. Anyway, the battle between the state of Illinois and Catholic Charities escalated yesterday as lawyers for Catholic Charities took legal action against the state of Illinois in order to continue handling foster care and adoption applications their way, which is a bigoted, prejudiced, anti-civil rights way, Catholic Charities. You see, since Illinois Governor Pat Quinn signed a civil union law in Illinois, not marriage. No. Can't allow gay folk to marry. Oh, but they can have civil unions. What's the difference? Marriage is not a sacrament of the church. It is a contract issued by the state, and therefore these putrid religions should have nothing to do with it. Since Pat Quinn, the governor of Illinois, signed that civil unions law, Catholic Charities has been working to get the legislation amended in a manner that would allow faith-based organizations. It's not faith-based. There is no faith in a religious institution, a cult that denies people love. That's not faith. That's tyranny. That's totalitarianism. That's religion. It's not faith-based organizations. They are bigoted. They are bigotry-based organizations. Anyway, Catholic Charities has been working to allow faith-based organizations to, quote, decline an adoption or family home application to a couple in a civil union if acceptance of that application would constitute a violation of the organization's sincerely held religious beliefs, end quote. So what they're saying, for Catholics, if they are sincere, if the organization Catholic Charities or any Catholic organization is sincere in its belief, I think the priests want all the children available to them so they can continue to molest and bugger and terrorize and abuse them. The priests want them. Catholic Charities wants the law of Illinois amended so that couples in a civil union, why they must be queer, are not allowed to apply to adopt children through Catholic Charities. That Catholic Charities has a right to say no, even though Catholic Charities takes money from the state and the federal government. A Senate committee voted down the amendment in April. This amendment that would allow so-called faith-based or actually fear-based organizations to step outside the law. And a House committee did the same in May. So now it's in court. On Tuesday, attorneys from the Thomas More Society. Of course. Attorneys from the Thomas More Society, a pro-life nonprofit Chicago Law Center focusing on abortion-related issues, filed a petition in a downstate court on behalf of Catholic Charities. The filing asked the judge to rule definitively, for once and for all, come on, judge, on whether their foster care and adoption agencies, Catholic Charities, foster care and adoption agencies, could continue to turn away unmarried parents, including those in civil unions, despite receiving funding from the state. See, the rat bastards want the money, tax money, some of which is provided by non-heterosexual people, and yet be able to discriminate against those very people who are continuing to put money into this cult known as the Catholic Church. This pedophilic cult known as the Catholic Church. Rick Santorum would know all about that. The lawsuit targets the Illinois Attorney General and Department of Children and Family Services, who said they plan on enforcing new policies that would ban faith-based agencies from discriminating against same-sex or unmarried couples. Peter Breen, the executive director and legal counsel for the Thomas More Society, told the Huffington Post yesterday that Catholic Charities is hoping the judge will bring some clarity and allow Catholic Charities to, quote, operate in the same way that they've been operating for decades, end quote. Well, Mr. Breen, I'll tell you, there are a lot of people here in the South who would like to continue to operate the way their families operated for 150 years. You know, they'd love to own slaves again. But, you know, we just don't do that. They do that in the Middle East, but we don't do that here. Not openly, unless they're sex slaves that are owned by Republicans. This attorney said, quote, Catholic Charities believes See, when they start out like that, that means they don't have a leg to stand on. There is no legal basis. So they use that. They say Catholic Charities believes. They don't cite legal precedent. They don't cite the law. They don't cite human rights. They don't cite laws passed by the state. They don't cite the fact that they take tax money and don't want to abide by the rules. They say Catholic Charities believes that it is fully in its legal rights to be doing exactly what it's doing. And so now we need a court to definitely declare that. Catholic Charities believes. Really? I thought Catholic Charities was a nonprofit corporation. That means Catholic Charities in reality is a filing someplace on a computer hard drive. Does it believe certain things? Does it believe Tuesday follows Monday? Last month, the Catholic Charities of the Diocese in Rockford, Illinois, announced they would no longer provide state-funded foster care and adoption services as of June 1st. Well, that's a good idea. If you are not going to be fair and rational and logical, if you are going to try to impose your twisted pedophilic cult beliefs on the very people who are supporting your asses, then get out of the business. You're right. Get out. I can't stand this stuff. I really can't. Makes me want to open a vein. Not mine. Not one of mine.
Love and marriage, they go together like a horse and carriage. This I'll tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other. Love and marriage, it's an institute you can't disparage.
The hour. The Koch brothers, these rapacious bastards, are at it again. Did you hear about this? Fake eviction notices. Koch funded so-called Americans for Prosperity, one of those Stalinist front organizations, put out a bunch of fake eviction notices in pasted to Detroit houses. Steve Bannon again, writing at Washington Monthly. The state director of Americans for Prosperity in Michigan offered no apologies for papering homes in Detroit's Delray District Monday with fake eviction notices. You can see these online. They have the words eviction notice in large type. The bogus notices told homeowners their properties could be taken by the Michigan Department of Transportation to make way for the new International Trade Crossing Bridge project. Now remember that bridge, has got the owner of the Ambassador Bridge all pissed off because he charges money to go across the Ambassador Bridge. So the Koch brothers jump in here. We talked about this the other night. If this bridge project goes forward, it's likely to draw traffic and revenue away from the nearly privately owned bridge, the Ambassador Bridge. So Americans for Prosperity is lobbying against the state project. And the Koch Finance Group's campaign now includes fake eviction notices. Can you imagine these filthy son of a bitches? I mean, it's not enough that they have billions upon billions upon billions of dollars, which enables them to do this. But they hire thugs. They hire brown shirts to go into minority neighborhoods and put fake eviction notices. If the bridge goes through, you are going to be forced out of your home. Get out now! I don't understand why these people putting up the fake eviction notices, they're fake, so they're taking a risk doing it. Why some of the neighborhood young men who are unemployed, didn't see these people, stop them, ask them what they're doing. I mean, if somebody comes up to my house to put a notice on the door, first of all, he'll be shot, but I'll only wound him, and then I will beat his ass. But I would imagine that some of these people in the neighborhoods where this happened, I mean, why not stop them, ask them what they're doing, and when they find out, put them in the hospital. Seriously. No. I don't give a damn how that sounds. I mean it. Put them in the hospital. You are coming to my house, putting up a fake eviction notice, and you are being paid by these Koch brother swine who don't have the courage to come out and do this themselves. They hire these front organizations. Yeah, I would, I don't understand why people in that neighborhood. Didn't stop some of these fake eviction notice posters and beat their asses. I mean, severely. Not kill them. Don't want to advocate killing. No, that's what Glenn Beck does. That's what Bill O'Reilly does. No. I'm just advocating a good ass whipping. What are you doing? You coming to my house, putting up a notice, a fake notice about eviction, and you are paid by some multi-billionaire son of a bitch? Are you serious? Whap, 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 whap. Now try to walk. I said try to walk! Oh, you can't walk? What's the matter? Oh, your leg's broken. Well, I'll be damned. Your leg's broke. How'd that happen? It has something to do with you putting up a fake eviction notice on my house, right? Huh? Americans for Prosperity said the flyers were intended to get local residents' attention, like, hey, you know, we're just kidding, man. You know, no big deal. To that extent, the stunt worked. It caused panic among many families in struggling communities who thought they were losing their homes. Grab these son of a bitches the next time and put them in a hospital. Do it. Come to my house, sucker. Come to my house. Bring it on. Put a notice on my front door. After I shoot you, I will beat your ass. Do you understand? You understand that? Steve Bennett says, I wonder the same thing every day. I'm left with the impression that right-wing attack dogs like those with Americans for Prosperity have no sense of limits and no concept of integrity. Well, you're right, Steve. I have a sense of limits, and I have a sense of integrity. And both of those say to me that if someone were to approach my house, whether it's here in Georgia or in some poor, beaten-down neighborhood in Detroit, if somebody comes to my house to put one of these half-ass rich person's notices to try to scare me, I will shoot them. And then I will beat their ass.
Gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, I have in front of me the 100th Moment with Bob. Oh, there's the theme music. Time for another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. The title of tonight's moment, More Happy Bunny Thoughts. Or, how can you be in two places at once when you're not anywhere at all? Hey, Mike. Cornelius Cornelii Alapidi, a Jesuit priest and sacred scripture nitpicker, wrote, quote, just as one discerns and knows a person by his appearance and way of being, one also knows the secret of a person's soul by his face. The face of the hypocrite pretends to have humility, equity, and justice. However, if the prudent and wise man examines him long and attentively, he will detect the hypocrisy. The face, therefore, is the image of the heart, and the eyes are the mirror of the soul. End quote. The average American watches 5 to 8 hours of television every day. What would Father Alapidi say was mirrored upon that 52-inch diagonal high-definition screen? I can't put words into the mouth of a Flemish priest long dead these 374 years, but I can make a guess. What's the Dutch word for madness? Though I've got 898 channels to choose from, regardless of what buttons I press on the remote, there are really only two types of programming available. When I turn on my television, I can either watch 1984 or Brave New World. Do I want to see the brutal reality of the corporate-controlled state in which we all live, or do I want to be distracted from it? The vast majority of those 898 channels are distractions. If I had a television with picture-in-a-picture technology, I could experience both dimensions simultaneously, but that way lies madness. Or as Father Alapidi might have said, Kronkzinning. As culture critic Neil Postman wrote in the foreword of his 1985 book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, quote, what Orwell feared were those who would ban books. What Huxley feared was that there would be no reason to ban a book, for there would be no one who wanted to read one. Orwell feared those who would deprive us of information. Huxley feared those who would give us so much that we would be reduced to passivity and egoism. Orwell feared that the truth would be concealed from us. Huxley feared the truth would be drowned in a sea of irrelevance. Orwell feared we would become a captive culture. Huxley feared we would become a trivial culture. As Huxley remarked in Brave New World Revisited, the civil libertarians and rationalists who are ever on the alert to oppose tyranny, quote, failed to take into account man's almost infinite appetite for distractions, end quote. Postman went on, in 1984, the book, people are controlled by inflicting pain. In Brave New World, they are controlled by inflicting pleasure. In short, Orwell feared that what we fear will ruin us. Huxley feared that our desire will ruin us. End quote. Neil Postman. Bob continues, sane people saw 1984 and Brave New World as warnings. Psychopaths read them as how-to books. They've combined and manipulated our fears and desires to rule the world far more ruthlessly than any James Bond villain. They merged both books into our reality. We are all gammas, deltas, and epsilons to the insane alphas and betas that populate our ruling elite. They don't care if we know how to read and write. They'd prefer that we didn't. They're not concerned if we don't have enough to eat or have health care. They don't care if they grind up our children to fight in their wars. As Kurt Vonnegut wrote in God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, quote, you know, I think the main purpose of the Army, Navy, and Marine Corps is to get poor Americans into clean, pressed, unpatched clothes so rich Americans can stand to look at them. End quote. These people are psychopaths, remember? They don't have the ability to care about their fellow human beings. That's why they're crazy. It's just our tough luck that they happen to be in control of our planet. In the depths of the Great Depression, it was necessary for everybody's peace of mind to balance the grimness of life with a couple of Mickey Mouse cartoons down at the neighborhood Bijou. A certain level of distraction is necessary to be able to sanely cope with reality. There's a lot to be said for diversions in the face of hopelessness. I know someone who recently came back from visiting the Philippines. She was going on and on about all the poor people who live in the slums of that poor third world country. She said they didn't have their priorities straight. She was disparaging them for owning televisions. If only they had the discipline to prioritize their lives, they'd somehow rise from their poverty. Well, I don't know about that. I figure if I was stuck in a slum in a third world country without an education or even enough food to eat, I don't think making up a prioritized to-do list would be my ticket out of a life of generational soul-grinding poverty. I'd probably mortgage my soul in small monthly installments forever and buy a TV. Of course, things are different in this country. The United States of America is not a third world country. We just happen to be the world's largest debtor nation. Our educational and healthcare systems are failing. Our physical infrastructure is crumbling, and our financial, legal, and political institutions are as well respected as their counterparts in any banana republic you can name. Over the last 30 years, the American people have been shortchanged, bamboozled, and flim-flammed out of their birthright by a bunch of cutthroat con men who lied, cheated, and killed their way to the top. And every election, we let them get away with it again. Maybe we are just a bunch of dumb epsilons who can't seem to figure out that every president we've elected in my lifetime lied their way into office regardless of their party affiliation. Maybe we're the rubes who think by working within the system, we won't notice it's the system itself that propagates the very misery we're fighting against. Maybe it's our fault for playing three-card Monte with the guy who steals our paycheck every time we step up to his card table. Maybe every night after dinner, but before we plop down into the lazy boy recliner, maybe we should entertain the question, do we resist or do we see what's on television? What do you call someone who is incapable of feeling empathy? A psychopath. What do you call people who seemingly don't have the ability to recognize and remember what psychopaths have done to them? How about voters? Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, the 100th on the Malloy program, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. You can go to Bob's website, superbeans.com. Check around. You will find where probably all 100 of these moments are located. And then you can read them and rend your garments, gnash your teeth, and pour ashes over the crown of your head. I wonder if we'll make it to number 200. Oh! You want some more Ed Koch stuff from the Progress Report? The billionaire Koch brothers, their giant oil conglomerate Koch Industries, and their vast network of right-wing political groups, think tanks, and other organizations are rarely out of the news these days, Josh Dorner writes at the Progress Report, but the oil profit-fueled, multi-pronged assault on clean energy that Koch groups launched this week is particularly notable and worrisome. Here's what you need to know about the latest Koch-fueled attack on clean energy and President Obama, which is, at its core, an effort to make the American people forget that oil companies like Koch Industries are responsible for and benefit from today's high gas prices and our reliance on dirty energy. Who? Americans for Prosperity, the Koch Industries oil-funded front group with state chapters in at least 32 states. The group is bankrolled in part directly by the Koch brothers, spent $45 million in last year's elections, and is positioning itself to be a force in 2012. More, oh, much more on this when we come back. Stay with us. Is explaining about the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity front organization of these Stalinists. Koch Industries and their vast network of right-wing political groups, think tanks, other organizations, they are going to buy the 2012 election. They are going to, this is their moment. They feel that the they've done everything they can to destroy confidence and the African-American guy who is the president of the United States. So they're going to make their move. They have fueled the racism in this country. They have done everything they can, these cockroaches, to undermine what's left. And there's not much left of our system of, I can hardly say it, representative government. Ah, ew, goddamn, what a joke. Anyway, so the organization that is positioning itself to be a force in 2012 is Americans for Prosperity. Americans for Prosperity, AFP, is involved in at least five major campaigns against clean energy right now. And as Josh Dorner points out, the progress report, they're starting this. The Please Don't Blame Oil Companies for High Gas Prices campaign. Or Josh says that. This week, AFP announced it was launching a Running on Empty tour to try to falsely blame President Obama for high gas prices. The tour will travel to Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Missouri, Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. The tour is, of course, funded by the profits that Koch Industries is making as a result of today's high oil prices. In reality, polls show that 9 out of 10 Americans blame Wall Street speculators and big oil's greed for the high prices. Even Goldman Sachs and ExxonMobil agree that speculation is to blame for today's high oil prices. Is that unlikely to be mentioned on this tour? Well, the manner in which the Kochs built an oil speculation empire that is partially responsible for driving up oil prices right now will probably not be talked about. The tour will be attacking the Clean Air Act. Various groups, but Koch groups, but especially AFP, are attempting to gut the Clean Air Act in order to prevent the EPA from using it, from using its regulatory powers to protect public health and from the dangers caused by global warming pollution. The Koch brothers are mass killers. The Koch brothers are mass killers. They are world-class mass murderers. They just haven't had a chance to really put the major plan into play. What these guys are counting on, truth seekers, is, a reduction in the global population. One that will give them more room to play. So, the goal here, now the Koch brothers are getting up there in years. They've already reached and passed, I believe, their biblical allowed 70. But they have offspring. They have spawn. And they want the spawn to be able to enjoy, you know, doing stuff without all kinds of members of the proletariat around. So, in my opinion, the ultimate goal of the Koch brothers is to reduce the population of the Earth, which is probably not a bad idea ultimately for the planet, but is a miserable idea given the fact that the Koch brothers are determined to decide who lives and who dies. Which group do you think they and their spawn will be in? Another aspect of what they're going after, attacking regional cap and trade programs. They already persuaded New Jersey Governor Chris Christie to bail out on the regional greenhouse gas initiative in the Northeast. We talked about that, remember, first part of the week or last week? Americans for Prosperity is staging a major protest featuring Herman Cain, Republican nominee or Republican contender for the nomination. Herman Cain, the pizza man! Outside the headquarters of the regional, the Greenhouse Gas Initiative headquarters in New York City. That was today, I think. Herman Cain, the pizza man, was out there today. I guess, I don't know, I didn't see anything on the news, but according to the AFP plan, they had Herman Cain out there, presidential contender on the Republican neo-fascist side, the pizza man, the godfather pizza man, talking to people, saying, listen, this regional cap and trade thing is just ridiculous. Now, the average bagger, you ever see them at protests? Stop cap and trade. You ask them what that means, they don't have a clue, nothing. What is cap and trade? Wait a minute while I scratch my ass. What is cap and trade? Wait a minute while I pick my nose. What is cap and trade? It's something to do with, the fact that Obama's from Kenya. Has something to do with that. I'm something. Jesus. They also are going to be attacking state-level renewable electricity standards. Political reports that Americans for Prosperity is considering strategies for killing renewable electricity standards in some three dozen states, including Colorado, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. They're going to be attacking natural gas vehicles. You ever seen those vehicles in Atlanta? They have the buses, a lot of buses. This bus is run on... It's an NGV, natural gas vehicle. The Koch brothers are mass killers. They, in a different time, a different place, they would probably be put on trial for something. Ecocide? I don't know. Something. But they are your typical psychopathological leaders. 7 past the hour. So, two newspapers, the Guardian of the UK and the Independent of the UK, are reporting that Margaret Thatcher has let it be known to Sarah Palin through Thatcher's representatives that Thatcher wants nothing to do with Sarah Palin dropping by. Allies of the former prime minister describe Palin as unworthy of an audience with Sarah Margaret Thatcher. Well, I guess she is. She's Lady Margaret Thatcher now, right? Palin wants to put on a little show, a little dance, a little striptease for the Republican right back here in the country that she is the true keeper of the Reagan flame, the Ronald Reagan flame, by meeting Margaret Thatcher, who was Reagan's closest ally on the world stage, right? So Palin wants to do a pole dance for the Queen, or not the Queen, but for the former Prime Minister. Not for the former Prime Minister, but for the drooling, slobbering, right-wing males back home. She told Christina Lamb in the Sunday Times of the UK, quote, "I am going to Sudan in July and hope to stop in England on the way. I am just hoping Mrs. Thatcher is well enough to see me, as I so admire her." Now, I don't know if the pole dancer understands that Margaret Thatcher has been fairly immobilized in a number of ways by a stroke. She is approaching 90. She rarely makes public appearances or receives world pole dancers like Sarah Palin. And I wonder if Sarah Palin understands that meeting her, Palin, would be a belittling moment for Margaret Thatcher. Not that I give a tinker's damn about Margaret Thatcher's attitude about meeting a global pole dancer like Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin's nuts. Lady Thatcher will attend the unveiling of a statue of Ronald Reagan outside the U.S. Embassy in Grosvenor Square on U.S. Independence Day, July 4th. Or so the rumor has it. She's going to, you know, that's about all Mrs. Thatcher can do anymore, is to go to a statue unveiling. And, you know, the statue's not going to ask her any questions, maybe. But she damn sure doesn't want someone like Sarah Palin popping up and asking Mrs. Thatcher how it felt to be queen. Or calling her Your Majesty. Now, of course, Palin couldn't care less. She's doing, like I said, she's doing this for the bohunks back in the U.S. So, run, Sarah, run. Oh, my God, who's calling from Mozambique? Who is... Someone's calling from Mozambique. Let's see, who could that be? Would that be Stephen in Burbank? No. Would it be RB from Canada? No. Who would be calling from Mozambique? Well, I have an idea. Let us find out. Hello?
Yeah, good day, Mike.
Oh, it's Blue! Hello, Blue. How are you?
Well, I'm rather disappointed, as a matter of fact, Mike, in you.
You always are disappointed in me.
No, for a very specific reason, though, because you don't seem to have picked up on the fact that I'm actually calling from my basement in Wichita, And I know I told Kath I was calling from Mozambique, but you should have picked up the 1/100th of a second difference in the transmission time.
All right, well, keep talking, and I may get it. Go ahead.
An old radio bloke like you should have picked that up.
There it is!
There you go. All right.
What's up, Blue? You're off to Cairo?
Well, tomorrow we're off to Cairo. Tonight we're going to go listen to some Fado. I don't know whether you're familiar with Fado.
Oh, very much so. Great singer.
And, you know, it's wonderful here because it's got a sort of an African twist to it as well.
Yeah.
But the reason I called was there's an editorial in one of the papers here today that I found interesting. It compares... Now, I know I said I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to break my promise, all right? And remember, this is not me. This is the editorial in the paper.
Sure.
So I'm not really breaking my vow. I'm just relaying the information.
I understand.
There's an editorial in one of the papers here today that compares Barack Obama unfavorably to Robert Mugabe, who, as you know, is the dictator of the country just to the west of us here in Zimbabwe. And among other things, it says, you know, Zimbabwe's Mugabe's a pretty nasty bloke, you know, but he hasn't invaded anybody yet, at least not lately.
Yeah.
So I thought I should pass that along. I felt it was my obligation to do that, you know.
Well, wouldn't be a more apt comparison be between Mugabe and, say, oh, I don't know, George Bush? I mean, Barack Obama has really hasn't, if you want to get right down and split the difference, Obama hasn't invaded anybody. He has perpetuated an invasion and occupation in two different countries, and he signed off on NATO. But the last time I checked, NATO's commander is not an American this go-around.
Well, the last time I checked, Libya was a sovereign nation.
Well, of course. I have. Listen, I'm not saying anything about the illegality of the NATO attack on Libya. NATO was chartered as a self-defense organization against the Warsaw Pact. So why NATO is in Afghanistan, why NATO bombed Serbia, why NATO is now attacking Libya is beyond me. But
well, I quite agree with you, Mike. You know, Obama is only, after all, the commander-in-chief. I mean, it's not as though he had any real power.
No, he's not the commander-in-chief of NATO.
No, but he's the commander-in-chief of the United States.
That's very true. But unless Obama is willing to break out of the NATO alliance, he pretty much is. The United States has a vote as to who they're going to invade next. I am not. Don't put me in this position, Blue. You're forcing me to defend Obama because you're offering up information that is not correct. Obama has not invaded another country.
NATO is not a creation of the United States and depends entirely on the United States for its leadership and its money.
No, it is not. And to say so would be to denigrate the European nations that are participants. So, I mean, don't do that. There are lots of things that we can attack Obama about. But to compare him to a mass murderer of his own citizens, like Mugabe is, to compare Obama to somebody who has ordered the butchering of white farmers in order to pay off black revolutionaries who don't have a clue as to how to farm the land, to the point...
So how many innocent people in Afghanistan and Iraq and Pakistan has Obama murdered since he came to office?
All right. You're just in a bitchy mood tonight, and I don't understand.
No, I don't think you want to acknowledge what's really going on.
No, I always acknowledge what's going on. I am anti-war. I'm anti-U.S. imperialism, about as anti as I can get. But what's going on here, Blue, is you are offering up statements that are factually incorrect, and it puts me in the hideous position of having to defend a president whose policies I do not support. That makes me uncomfortable. So based on that discomfort, I'm going to move on.
From the moment you wake and leave the house in the morning, the terrorists or Democrats strike without warning. So to your backseat in bed, wear a bucket on your head.
That's time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Ideology, the raids on Iraq and the rape of the ecology while the treasury's being bled. Keep a bucket on your head.
21 past the hour.
Tell us what we see. We're being led by some.
Let's do some phone calls. Lou is in Los Angeles. Hello, Lou.
Hey, Mike, it's Lee, but that's okay. Same consonant, brother.
Lee, I'm sorry. My bad.
No. It's okay, man. It's totally okay, bro. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. I've been wanting to call you, Mike. I heard your I listen to you nightly, especially when I barbecue with a nice quart of beer. And my wife heard you and goes, "Who's that?" I'm like, "Oh, that's Mike Malloy, man. He's fucking great." Anyways,
No. You can't say that, Lou. I realize you're listening on Sirius, but you can't use the F word because we also carry the program is carried by over-the-air broadcasting. I don't know. I get tired of saying this. I get tired of having to dumb people, but I can't allow you to say the F word. All right? Maybe next time, Lou. No F word. All right? No offense, but if you want to call, by the way, Truth Seekers, the number is 877-996-2556. Dave is in Chicago, listening on XM. Hello, Dave.
How's it going, Mike?
All right, how are you?
I'm writing no F word on my palm.
Thank you.
My hand right here.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, there's a real easy way for Blue to prove the things, you know, that he says that he's here and he's there. He could get a YouTube site and videotape the phone call as he makes it and maybe a few places in Mozambique or wherever he's coming from and say, "Here's where I am today and here I am on the phone with Mike Malloy," and put it up on YouTube and boom, and your listeners could go to it, actually see Blue in Mozambique and wherever else he goes to it.
No, very simple. I don't doubt that he calls from where he says he does, I think it's kind of cool that somebody who is because of the nature of his business, he's a corporate jet pilot, a commercial jet pilot. I don't mean he flies passengers; he flies freight. And because of that, he's all over the place, and I appreciate his calling. The problem I have sometimes with Blue, I don't have a problem with somebody outside this country criticizing the United States. We have Canadian callers and emailers who do it all the time. And I don't think anybody would understand the U.S. better than a Canadian who has to live right next door and watch this stuff. My problem with Blue sometimes, and tonight, slowly but surely, he's been upping the ante a little bit each time he calls with me. And there's no reason for him to come after me. We're on the, you know, I got
that as a phone call progressed, but I had the idea before you guys kind of started going back and forth.
Yeah, but there's no point in doing that. Because first of all, without turning into a real bastard here, it's the Mike Malloy Show. It's not the Blue Show. And, you know, I like to have people call in. I don't do it a lot. But when people do call in, if somebody wants to make a point, make your point. But to put me in a position where I have to defend the president of the United States, whose policies I don't like. I don't like it. But when you make factually incorrect statements on this program, I don't care who you are, left or right, I will do my damnedest to stop you right there and say, "Hey, you're not telling the truth. Barack Obama did not invade anybody." Now, if it works to Blue or somebody else's agenda to say that he did, well, then take that kind of nonsense someplace else. You know, I mean, the truth is the truth. That's all. And that's all I expect callers to do. That's why I very seldom, if ever, have right-wingers on, you know, call in, because they cannot speak the truth about anything. So when I hear somebody like Blue, whose point of view, political point of view, I pretty much agree with, start using, making statements that are not true, then I, you know, I've got to bail out after I tell him that his statements are not true.
Right. I just wanted to pass that idea along. I know you guys got into it toward the end, but I had the idea before you guys started getting into it, but I thought I'd just pass it along. It would be kind of cool to see Blue in Mozambique.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Dave, thanks, man. You're breaking up a little bit, but thanks for checking in. You know, like I said, I don't have any doubt. You know, we make jokes about it. And calling from his aunt's basement in you know, the suburbs of Wichita was one of my emailers or phone callers sent that. That's not an original idea with me, but, you know, I think it's kind of funny because you get somebody who in any given moment is someplace exotic. You know, I don't think Blue has ever called from, you know, from Feather Duster, Japan or someplace. You know, it's always someplace really, really cool, man. We'll be right back.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona. How close are those flames to you, Tom?
On the other side of the state.
Oh, good. All right.
Anyway, hey, I got a good pun for you.
Okay.
I feel your blues. That's funny. I feel your blues. Oh. No. I mean, I hate to be a nationalist. I hate to, and for you to have to defend Barack Obama, I've been following you through the twisties and turnies ever since when he was fighting Hillary Clinton, you know?
Yeah.
And I've been following you through all this, ups and downs, and how you do this. And I've written you emails to explain my feelings. I mean, I follow you, you know what I mean? It's, like, really cool.
Yeah.
I just had to tell you that. I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's all right. You know, whatever you want to say is cool, you know, within limits, but...
I didn't use the F word.
No,
come on, give me a break.
No, you didn't, and I appreciate that, Tom.
But you know, I've been following you. Oh, I used the F word there. I followed you. You know?
Okay,
I
but mean, you know, but the reason you called in tonight is...
Because I feel your blues about how blue... was talking about, you know, and how you had to get nationalism. I mean, I felt the nationalism coming out in you about, well, here's the outsider talking about our pain.
No. Wait a minute. Wait a second, Tom. I don't know how many times I have to explain this, but I'll do it one more time. I am not a nationalist. If anything, I believe in doing away with international borders, because down that road lies wars. I mean, look at history. The problem I had with Blue, or anybody who calls this program and starts making statements that are categorically false, at that point, I'll make an attempt to point out to them that the statement is categorically false. And if the caller persists in stating it as if it were true, Then I move on. I don't play that game very well. When somebody says Obama invaded two countries, that is not true. There are things, grievous things, criminal things that Obama has done. But he did not invade two countries. And when I have to explain to an internationalist what NATO is, I don't believe NATO should be doing a goddamn thing except defending Western Europe against an attack by the Soviet Union, which doesn't exist anymore. So the whole idea of NATO is a joke. So to put me in a position to defend a president who I don't agree with, who I do believe has created criminal acts, or committed criminal acts, and to explain to an internationalist the NATO alliance, which I think at this point in its history is a joke, puts me in the position where, no, you know, there's real stuff to deal with. I'm not going to deal with that kind of crap from anybody. I don't care who it is. So, you know, to suggest, Tom, that because Blue says challenging things about the United States is the reason I don't listen, or it makes me a nationalist, you're not paying attention. If you have, quote, followed me, unquote, for as long as you have, then you know I am not a nationalist. If somebody wants to criticize or even take it to the next level and attack verbally the leadership in this country, I don't care if they're from Lower Slobovia. Have at it. Just keep your comments real. Jesus. I mean, that's not difficult. Keep them real. And that's all. That's all I ask. You know, so to cause or to try to imply that there's some kind of a headbutting contest between Blue and me is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, I don't have any problem with Blue. I know a lot of my listeners do. But, you know, as long as he's not using the F word or lying, either inadvertently or to make a point, he's welcome on the program. But, you know, to suggest that I have a problem with this political point of view is ridiculous. I don't have a problem with this political point of view. I have a problem with putting statements on this program that are categorically incorrect. That's all. Please get that, people, okay? Get that. That's the essential part of this program. Get it, and then this issue won't come up again. It's easy. Mark is in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Listen, I wanted to ask you, are you familiar with this pledge to Grover Norquist? That
oh yeah,
yeah. Are the names public who signed it?
Are the what?
Are the names public who signed that pledge? The Republicans that signed it.
Well, I think any Republican office holder who seeks national office has to sign it. I was watching a little bit of Lawrence O'Donnell's program on MSNBC tonight, and he said that the only Republican candidate or would-be nominee for president who did not sign it was Mitch Daniels of Indiana. And Mitch Daniels, of course, is no longer in the running. Mitch Daniels is too busy back in the state of Indiana trying to, you know, telling lies about Planned Parenthood. But Mitch Daniels didn't sign. All the rest, of course they do. I mean, that's Grover Norquist controls the purse strings for a lot of organizations. I don't mean he controls the purse strings. He tells the rich bastards where to put the money. Grover Norquist wants to destroy the so-called welfare state, the social welfare network that's been put together in this country over the past 80 years. Grover Norquist is a destroyer. He's not a builder. He's not a creator. He's a destroyer. He's like the Koch brothers. For some reason, well, it's not for some reason, psychopaths do this, or sociopaths. This is what they do. Break things down, tear them up, destroy them inside their own country. Ruin everything for everybody else, create chaos, and some of them take it even one step further, like Bill O'Reilly suggests that a physician be murdered. Glenn Beck suggests that entire organizations be shot up. Norquist doesn't take it to that level. He just, he's more effective by demanding. That's his little piece of the power pie. He makes him, I don't know, it arouses him somehow to think that he has to, that he gets all these Republican dogs to come over and pee on his tree. He just thinks it's great.
Yeah, well, he's probably the number one enemy of the middle class. And
oh, absolutely.
And you know something? It's guys like this and this Pelini who are going to cause a revolution in this country. People
absolutely
are not going to put up with these insane idiots for much longer when they start having agendas that are right out there for everybody to see, that are just out to destroy the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
No taxes for the rich, and just drain it out of us.
Yeah.
This guy, this Grover Norquist, is one of the worst people in this country.
That's true.
One of the guys we ought to export out of here. And you know another thing, Mike, I heard Tom Hartman say that Barack Obama could get these Republicans and these teabaggers in a room and tell them, if you don't raise that debt ceiling, you're not getting any money from the government. We're going to pay our bills first, and you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And that's what he needs to do, because if he doesn't, there's going to be hell to pay down the road, Mike.
Well, that's true, but Barack Obama is not that kind of a leader. Barack Obama is an historic leader because of the nature of his election, the fact that he's African-American in a country that is known globally for its racism. That would be us. But Barack Obama is not a leader. He's an orator. He's a great speaker. But he's not a leader. He's certainly not a political leader. And these Republicans just chew his ass up and spit it out every time they turn, every time he turns around. So if Hartman suggests that, Hartman's right. All he has to do is take them into a room and say to them what you just quoted Hartman as saying. But Barack Obama won't do that because he's not a leader.
Well, you know, these Republicans are so, they're so crazy and so radical that there's going to be consequences if somebody doesn't put a stop to these people. Sooner or later, down the road, I don't know what the percentage of us are, Mike, but there's going to be backfire to it, and it's going to be real ugly.
I know, and I worry about that because I agree with you, Mark, that people can only put up with this for so long. I've been saying for a couple of years, 3 years, 4 years, what's it going to take until the American people come out of the ether and decide that it is time to rise up against the people who are and the institutions that are destroying us. I got to leave it there, Mark. Thank you. I appreciate your call. 10 before the hour. Dr. Calls. Hussein is in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hussein, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for letting me say my 10-cent token, so to speak.
Sure.
I was listening to the program, and I listen to your program almost nightly. I get listened to every chance I got, and because it's...
Well, thank you.
It's probably one of the only same program there is, only a few of them left. But anyway, I was listening. I get to the tail end of your exchange with the man who had the British accent, sound like. Whatever his name was.
Blue. He's Australian.
Right, yeah. So, and I want to disagree with you. It sounded to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you expressed a strong indignation with perhaps the comparison he made with Obama. I do agree with you that Obama did not invade Afghanistan and Iraq, but I think that indignation is probably misplaced, and I felt with your expression that you made about Mugabe, and I'm not a supporter of Mugabe. He's a vicious dictator. But I think we have to put it in context. And really, if you compare Obama to Mugabe, Mugabe is almost a saint to me. And the reason I say that is following. Mugabe, you have to understand that the background behind the white farmer's land being taken when Rhodesia became Zimbabwe during the independence back in the 70s, there was an agreement made by the liberators of that country and the Western world, the United States, British, and a couple other European countries. And the agreement was, since the white farmers control the vast majority of the fertile land, that they would turn the land, X amount of land, to the indigenous people so that they can farm. And the money that's supposed to be bought with this farm from the white farmers was supposed to be provided by the Western countries. Now, because they disagreed with Mugabe for other political reasons, they reneged on the agreed plan. And Mugabe begged and begged for a decade, more than a decade, as a matter of fact. And they would not budge. And that is when he said, well, you can take the land. So I just want to make that clear.
All right. Well, Hussein, I appreciate the history lesson regarding Mugabe, Rhodesia, and Zimbabwe. To be honest, and no offense intended, I don't need the history lesson. I understand what happened there. Because that was a country that was of mighty interest to me when Ian Smith was overthrown. Ian Smith went on to serve in the parliament. My point was, if someone wants to compare Barack Obama's domestic policies to the domestic policies of Mugabe, which is the only way that you can compare, because Mugabe does not have international policies. Mugabe is an internal dictator who has made certain that his people are dying of ignorance, disease, poverty, and starvation. And the reason that is happening, part of the reason, was when the revolution occurred, when the country was turned over to black leadership, the white farmers were there were international agreements were to do this and do that, and it didn't happen. But my question was, why did Mugabe replace the white farmers with people who had never farmed?
Right. Fair point. I totally get that. You're right.
What Mugabe was doing, my memory is that Mugabe was paying off, and you touched on it, he was paying off the militants who supported him.
Yeah.
And as a result, Zimbabwe went from being a net exporter of food, one of the breadbaskets of Africa, into being a country that is now on the brink of total collapse. That is not a fair comparison to Obama.
Yeah, I got it, Mike. That's a fair point.
That's what I was saying to Blue.
Now,
beyond that, the other two comments about the invasion of the use of NATO or the invasion of Afghanistan or Iraq, I will not allow that kind of revisionist history. Those invasions were conducted by George W. Bush. Now, whether or not Obama continues the policies is irrelevant to the point of who made the invasion.
Can I make a couple of other comments?
I only have 10 seconds. If you can say what you need to say in 10 seconds.
Right. With regard to Libya, you would have to really give way to the Obama's decision to support. I think he's the prime driver. I don't think it was a European decision, really.
Why?
Because the Europeans don't make that kind of decisions.
We can talk about that another night, Hussein. I'll give that some thought. Maybe we can chat about it again. But that is more or less saying that the other members of NATO are completely powerless and just are whipped dogs and do whatever the United States says. That might have been true during the bad old days of the Soviet Union. I don't know that it's still true now. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Is the IRS